House Bill 186. With us, we have Senator McGuire, Stephen Huggins, and Wagner. Time now is 4:05. We're going to move 186 today. You have 45 seconds, Mr. Tom Wright.
Mr. Chairman, I really have nothing to add. For the record, by the way, my name is Tom Wright, staff to Speaker Harris. I really have nothing to add from previous testimony.
Okay, very good. And with that, Doug, I know you have some things. Yeah. There were some questions, if you would.
My name is Doug Vincent Lang with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. We got several questions last time regarding the confidentiality and how we would assure for the confidentiality of this data. And so we provided the committee with two different items. One is a memorandum that came from Kirk Brogdon to myself, which basically shows the security processes we have in place at Fish and Game to assure that this data is secure and that it isn't given free access to anybody within the department or to the public. As a matter of fact, I was somewhat shocked to find out that I can't even gain access to this material without basically signing my life away. The second thing is that once we transfer the data that what this bill would allow, we have a signed memorandum of agreement with the federal agencies, National Marine Fisheries Service, on what would actually they would agree to do once we transferred that data over to them. And it goes from basically signing in a witness approved certificates of as whoever's going to gain access to that data, all the way to the end that there's penalties associated with breakage of this memorandum of agreement, which would consist of basically a violation of federal law, which is punishable by a maximum of a year in prison, a minimum of 6 months in jail, and $100,000 penalty. So I guess I'm convinced that we have processes in place to assure that this data integrity is assured and that we don't have ways of getting around it. And once we transfer it to the federal government, that data will remain confidential.
Good. Questions for Doug or comments? Are there any questions overall by committee members on the bill? I think it's a remind me the mandatoriness of this bill very quickly.
We need this bill basically to be able to share information with the National Marine Fisheries Service on some of the things that they're currently considering for managing the sport charter fleet at their June council meeting. And some of the options that they have available to them, things like annual limits, may not be available to them unless we can share that data with them.
Just one question.
Yeah, Senator Wagner.
Is this going to be are you going to keep a running tally? In other words, are these going to have to be turned in weekly, biweekly, monthly? How are you going to, as far as the quota and the poundage, how's that going to be done?
Through the chair, Senator, the information has to be turned in weekly to us.
Okay. Okay. And we have Mr. Doug McCune, or Gerald McCune. So just put yourself on the record. We'd be glad to hear your testimony. All right. But after you put yourself on the record, tell me where you're supporting or not supporting this bill.
Okay, I'll make it short, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jerry McCune. I represent the United Fishermen of Alaska, and we support the bill. And for all the reasons stated by everybody, you probably heard it twice now, and we'd like to see this sharing of information go on so we can put this issue to rest someday and with the best information possible.
Okay, very good. Questions for Mr. McCune? Very good. Are there other people in the audience who would like to speak to this bill? Okay. Senator Stevens?
Mr. Chairman, I move CS for House Bill number 186 out of committee with the attached zero fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Is there objections? Hearing none, this bill will move from committee. Yay. We'll take about a 2 minute at ease. Before us is House Bill 176, creating the Russo Causeway Park. Representative Wilson and Mr. Cliffstone, put yourself on record, please.
I'm Representative Peggy Wilson, District 2, and this is my Chief of Staff, Cliffstone.
Okay. I have one question before we go any further. Tell me, in 30 seconds or less, the history of 292 Battery.
Well, as far as I know, I can tell you a little bit here. During World War II, the Army came in and wanted to have kind of a defense across Sitka in case the Japanese came back and did more than what they had already done. And so they connected 800 feet of causeway from one island to another island. These are just tiny little islands. And they connected them all. And they had that causeway. And to this day, there's still a lot of things there. There's an anti-aircraft gun. There's emplacements. There's ammo magazine structures. There's two bunkers. There's a fuse house and a tri-level command post. And it's pretty neat. I've been out there, and this causeway has already been added to the National Registry and of historical places, and it's been designated as a landmark by the National Park Service. So what we would like to do with this bill is just to make sure the Fort Russo Causeway State Historical Park.
Okay. So with that, why don't you give us an overview of your bill very quickly? We just wanted to... I'm sorry, Senator Stevens.
Just another historical question. Who was Fort Russo named after?
But there's someone online that can probably answer that for you.
I think for future reference, you should know that he was the commander of the American troops when the Sitka became a part of the United States.
Oh, okay.
1867.
I didn't know that. All right.
And I guess the other one, historically, I see the island of Jabonski. Jabonski, who was that named after? Because it just seemed like it starts out Japan and gets a whole piece of it.
Yeah.
We are filing to take away your college degrees. I hope you know that.
That's a new bill.
That's all the hard questions. Go ahead.
Well, actually, what we're trying to do is preserve the history in this area. It's so wonderful, and we don't have too many areas in Alaska that go back to World War II and what was happening and how Alaska was involved. And this really does make a difference. And Sitka Trail Works was awarded a federal grant of $140,700 to begin work on renovating the Fort Russo Causeway from World War II. And $60,000 of the grant money was given to DNR and the state's Historical Preservation Office to pay for site mapping, cultural survey, and inventory work. And another $14,000 was used for phase one environmental assessment. And another federal trails grant is pending for this project in the federal transportation legislation for 08 and 09. And they have a business plan, and the business plan indicates modest tourism dollars in the beginning, which will bring in a net of around $12,000 a year. And the program, as the program grows, the completed DNR budget, which they think will be about $16,800 a year, will eventually be supplanted, and with money that they raise, and think that there will be upwards of $20,000 that will go into the general fund to be used for other parks. And what they're going to do is have tourists go back and forth, and there's no way to get to the island except through on a boat.
Yep, and that's the part that says boat charter costs associated with assessing the site. Is that in the fiscal note? Is that what that says in your fiscal note?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, Cliff Stone, staff to Representative Wilson. The fiscal note is primarily aimed at, that's what it would take for DNR to manage that site out there. That would hopefully go away in the next 3 to 5 years as the tourist dollars supplant that the need for that fiscal note from the state. It's a small one, but yet we realize in these days of tight budgets that it still is a significant amount of money. But the business plan that we've seen these folks put together indicate that as the cruise ships come through, they will be able to really build up that economic business, and then eventually supplant that the need for any more money from the legislature.
Yeah, I guess, and I don't mean to drag you into the conversation I had with DNR, but we had a proposed boat launch in a state park that the fiscal note for that was $100,000 just to run the boat launch.
Depends if they like the project or not.
Again?
It depends if they like the project or not.
Yeah, exactly. So if DNR, anybody from DNR here?
No offense, but...
You don't have to come up. It's just the point, the difference in yep. fiscal notes in this case.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. I did want to mention that Mike Eberhardt with the Division of Parks is here to answer any specific questions. And I believe we have one individual online that would like to give brief testimony. I might add, Mr. Chairman, that this isn't done very often. It is kind of special, and I think the folks in Sitka realize this is special. The last time a state park was designated was the Shuyak State Park on the Kodiak Archipelago. So we feel that, and the community of Sitka feels very honored to be considered for this designation.
Do you have any detractors from this?
Mr. Chairman, no. Matter of fact, I've got a packet here full of no one has come forward, and I've got volumes of notes and petitions from residents in Sitka, and not one has come out against this bill and the idea to create this park.
Yeah, you may have said it, and I may have missed it. It's on the National Register, right?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman.
Yes,
on that point, so it's already designated as a park, so all the rules surrounding that, the community is used to that. There aren't any new sets of rules or regulations that the community will have to face?
Right now, it's a historical. It's designated as a historical place.
Okay.
And but it is it's by the National Park Service.
Okay. I just say that because, like out at Katmai and stuff, you know, there are the Park Service. Once it comes under that, there is legitimate discourse about what you can regulate in terms of fishing. For example, is the first thing that comes to my mind. That the Brooks River there, folks were really used to being able to trout fish, and then the Park Service decided, you know, to go down to one, and so there was controversy that surrounded that. It's same people going to the same place, but all of a sudden it's a new designation. So I just wanted to know if, you know, the folks in the community were used to the rules, or if there were new rules that would come up.
Through the chair, Senator McGuire. It might be prudent to have Mr. Eberhardt come up and answer that specific question, because that is a valid point. There would be, I believe, minor changes.
Okay.
Mr. Eberhardt, would you come forward, please?
I think that's kind of scary.
Yeah.
Just put yourself on the record.
Mike Eberhardt, Park Superintendent for Southeast Area Parks. So through the chair to Representative McGuire, the listing on the National Historic Register is just a listing. What that does is then require the land manager to abide by certain rules, or in order to stay on that list, in order to preserve those resources. The land currently is not managed as a park unit. It's managed, actually, FAA has had it. I shouldn't say FAA, the DOT has had it through under working with FAA through state ownership. So it's been very restricted in its use because of 9/11 issues and airport security issues. And we're going to open up some of that by taking it over as a park and still maintaining the demarcation line between the airport and the causeway. But our management will change from general state lands to state parks, where we will then manage it as a park according to the statutory mandates that you've got before you there. And that's where we will be managing it according to our historic standards and trying to keep it open for the public to picnic and the customary uses that are there, and that's where a lot of the petitions for people to maintain what they have been doing, it actually opens it back up so they can do what they used to do in the past prior to some of these shutdowns with the airport security issues.
If I might, just, Mr. Chairman, so just in follow-up, the part that just I always get nervous, page 3 on lines 19 through 21, the commissioner may designate by regulation incompatible uses within the land and water of the Fort Rousseau Causeway State Historical Park. And that's just, I guess I kind of want a little bit more clarification, because it's amazing some of these bills we pass and then the regulations are written and you never intended all these laws that come after it. And, you know, I was pointing out in Katmai that they just have become more and more restrictive, and it's real tough on folks. So I just love to hear a little bit more about, when you say land and water, is that fishing and?
Representative McGuire, through the chair. We purposely left out all of the water except for where we want to put the dock in this bill, so that there was no conflict with existing fisheries or harvest of herring roe and things like that. So we minimalized that through that. The small area that we did retain out for the dock, there currently might be some, probably is some herring roe harvest there, but none of the local citizens have voiced any objection to what they currently do there that we would even consider outside of the realm for the uplands. There's no, you know, big game hunting or stuff like that goes on, because we would be managing it for the historical purposes to preserve all that historical integrity. Not that it would be necessarily in conflict with hunting, but our regulations wouldn't allow, you know, hunting within that, you know, they're only 100-yard island, so it'd be tough to have that. But the fishing is not an issue, and we've gone through that a lot with the community, and that's why it is just the uplands, and we aren't taking any management into the park per se that's being managed for the historical purposes.
And also, through the chair, Senator,
it doesn't matter.
The land itself used to be connected to the actual airport, but when they put the airport in the 60s, then that cut that land off, and the only access is water. You can't walk there, you can't drive there. And I've been there, and some of it is narrower than this room. So it's not, you know, it's just kind of a string kind of islands that were a barrier and protection for the rest of Sitka.
Okay. And are there any activities that presently that are going on that anybody's protested or we know of? Because, like, as I recall, National Wildlife Refuge is three foot outside the boundary. You can duck hunt, as an example, for those who are for water activities.
It's too close to the airport to have any kind of shooting or anything like that, because it's the airport is right real close to it.
Okay. Okay. Senator Green.
What would happen if this didn't pass?
They would probably continue trying to keep it up, because there's a real strong group of people that are trying to preserve the area, and the lots and lots and lots of volunteers have been out there to work on it, clean it up, and to try to preserve it.
That's good. Other questions for the bill sponsor, or Mike or Cliff? Okay, good. We're going to hold the bill all over to just take a look at a couple of factors, but we appreciate your being with us today, and we look forward to seeing you in the near future. And next, we will bring before us House Bill 165, Big Game Guides and Transporters, Representative Ledoux and Suzanne Hancock.
Big Game.
Yes, thank you very...
Put your record, please.
Thank you very much, Chair Huggins and the rest of the Resources Committee. My name is Gabrielle Ledoux, and I am the representative from House District number 36, and with me is Suzanne Hancock, my Chief of Staff. House Bill 165 rights an inadvertent wrong and promotes economic development in rural areas. The bill is an act relating to providing field accommodations for big game hunters. In 1996, much-needed legislation was enacted to define who is a big game hunter, outfitter, or transporter, and to provide regulations for licensing and other considerations. However, there was no provision for the person who merely wants to rent his or her cabin to people who may or may not be hunting. And there are many people in rural Alaska who have extra cabins or whose cabins are empty for part of the year, and this bill will allow them to rent their cabins without falling into any of the regulations found in the statute. It's very difficult to generate economic development in rural areas, and this bill will enable people in rural areas to provide a service and to make a little bit of additional money. Members of the Big Game Commercial Services Board have worked with my office in order to craft a bill that will protect their interest while allowing others to do business. And if you have any questions, you can address them either to me, or if I can't answer them, I'm going to defer to Ms. Hancock.
Hey, Suzanne, would you put yourself on the record in case we have questions?
Yes, sir. Suzanne Hancock, staff to Representative Ledoux.
Very good. Any questions for Representative Ledoux or Suzanne? Next, we will go to Bobby Fithian, Alaska Professional Hunters Association.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, Mr. Fithian. Please put yourself on the record, and we will be glad to hear your testimony.
Yes. Chairman Huggins and committee members, for the record, this is Bobby Fithian, Executive Director of the Alaska Professional Hunters Association. I'm testifying from Lower Tontina, Alaska today. The Alaska Professional Hunters Association supports HB 165, which fills a much-needed void and statutory language that relates to legitimate use of privately owned lodges, houses, or cabins on private land. I've been present and listened to public parties at public meetings who have been disaffected by the lack of this statutory language, and the Alaska Professional Hunters Association believes that Representative Ledoux has done a good job in addressing their concerns. Just to be brief, we encourage you to support this bill. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them for you. Thank you for your testimony. I mean, thank you for letting me testify today.
Yeah, thank you. Questions for Mr. Fithian? Bobby, question. How have we, in the past number of years, been able to operate without this bill?
The disaffected parties, the individuals who had finally came to Representative Ledoux and asked her to address this issue, have had a real serious challenge in dealing with public safety, with the Big Game Commercial Services Board, with land use, with agencies that own land around these people's private properties. And if you want to hear a real sad story, you could listen to their hours of challenges that they had dealing with trying to get the right to rent their privately owned cabins to big game hunters in the field. And it's been a pretty sad story, and you can't help but feel for them when you hear their stories. The challenge has been, historically, the laws, regulations, and statutes pertaining to who can supply or provide what kind of services to big game hunters in the field has been a complex and challenging task to define. And when it was finally defined in our current regulations and statutes, unfortunately, there was a loophole left that didn't address these privately owned cabins and lodges and houses. So it's been a challenge. Chairman Huggins.
No, I understand. But whom is doing the challenging? Who are you dealing with?
That's a good question.
It has been public safety predominantly trying to figure out how to address the what the private property holders or the cabin holders have been trying to do from their privately owned cabins, because the existing regulations and statutes forbid those private landholders to rent those cabins to big game hunters, and there has been the challenge.
Okay, so just so we get the full picture, it sounds like these are cabins that are actually probably on some sort of public land?
No, this bill only addresses the cabins, homes, and lodges that are on private land, not on public lands.
Okay. Any further explanation of that?
It's kind of hard to explain, really, because intuitively you wouldn't think that we'd have any laws that were prohibiting people from renting their cabins on their private cabins on private land. But somehow or other, because these big game laws, they become so convoluted and so complex that at least that's the way they have been interpreted. And up until relatively recently, I guess the troopers were either not aware of this or they were simply ignoring it. And people were renting their cabins. And then last year, the year before, I mean, they went around and they were citing people and they were telling them that they were going to be in a world of hurt if they continued to rent these cabins. So that's when a constituent of mine came to me. And at first I couldn't believe what he was saying, because as I say, it intuitively doesn't make any sense. I mean, we're supposed to be for free enterprise and so forth. And so, but we looked into it and he was right.
Do we have anybody from the Department of Law or Public Safety?
No.
Okay. I think I would feel more comfortable if I had a chance to talk to both Public Safety and Department of Law. I mean, I'm the regulating agencies on it. So. I empathize, and it's sort of a sad day to hear this, but yes, Senator McGuire.
Yeah, we were talking earlier about that. You get in a flurry of passing bills, and it's just, you just worry. I mean, the government is just regulating everything now, and I can envision unintended consequences with just about every bill I see, and this is a good example. But the only question I had, Representative Ledoux, is are there cases that we may not be covering where an individual owns a private cabin on public land? And I don't know, I could envision in some of the places that are really heavily federal and state land owned, because it does clearly stay a state or federal cabin on state or federal land, but what about the private cabin on state or federal land that might be some kind of an accommodation through a long-term lease or something?
Leases aren't contemplated by this bill. Okay. So you've got to own the property. And if I could just interject one point, if this committee does decide to pass on this bill, this does have a judiciary committee referral where the public safety and the Department of Law considerations could be addressed.
Okay. Other questions? We will hold this bill over, but thank you very much.
We're done?
Oh, we're done. Oh, good.
Yeah, I'm loving these committees.